Hello, my name is Phil Blancato, President and CEO of Ladenburg Thalmann Asset Management, a division of Advisor Group. Today is April 15th, tax day. Can you imagine today's tax day? So often in the past, we've thought about so many other things on a day like this, making sure we got all our data right and getting it to our account or filing a return. And this year is quite different. The federal tax return's been delayed until July, and very possibly in the state you live in, you don't have to file until July as well. And that's because there is so much turmoil in the marketplace. Certainly when we think about this environment that we're in, it raises so many concerns about where we are from the state of the economy, where we are from a social standpoint, where the globe is at, and more importantly, how does this personally affect you? Well, today we're going to try and go through some of those topics, try and get a feel for what's the latest, and specifically, how has it changed since the last time we may have caught up? Well, to jump right in, we've kind of driven this philosophy of there's two things the stock market and the bond market, the economy, need to find out to find a footing, to find a baseline. And the first one is, how is the spread of the virus growing or shrinking? Are we getting control of it? And the second one is there any unknowns? What is the unknown about the potential to stop it? You know, what vaccines or antiviruses are out there, and or is the social distancing working? And then if you look at those two together, how has it impacted the economy? Well, we've had a heck of a run in the last few weeks here. Today, the stock market was down 1.8% on the Dow Jones Industrial Average and 2.2% on the S&P 500. So not a great day today, better day yesterday, but certainly nowhere near the lows where we were. You might remember from the very highest of the market in mid-February to the lowest of March, we plummeted 34%. We're after a day like today, we're down only about just shy of 14% on the year. So things have gotten a bit better. But you have to ask yourself, has the stock market gotten ahead of itself? Has it come too far, too fast, with the idea that so far we really don't know how deep and wide the impact on the U.S. economy will be? Well, first off, let's address the virus and where we're at. It's nice to know that things are improving. When you look at the total number of people infected globally, we are now over 2 million, and that's very unfortunate that globally we have broken through that 2 million person number. Great concern. The total active cases right now stands at 1.4 million. There's roughly, of those active cases, you can look at the total number of deaths and those who have recovered, 127,000 deaths and 491,000 people have recovered of the 619,000 people with an outcome. So the vast majority continue to recover. When you look at Europe versus the United States, Europe has nearly 1 million cases and we have around 600,000. Believe it or not, we, from a standpoint of number of folks who have died versus number of folks in Europe, we're significantly better, where they have roughly 85,000 people that have died and we 26,000. So perhaps because of our medical system, also because of the demographics in the United States, means we have less older folks than they do. But on total, it's becoming a human tragedy, no doubt about it, with the number of people passing away. However, let's pivot for a minute. When you think about, are we getting control of it? Let's talk about New York City, the epicenter of it. Believe it or not, the highest number of new cases in New York City goes back to April 6th, 6,000 in just that day. And yet just on the 13th of April, just a few days ago, that number plummeted to 797. We're watching a significant decline in the number of people who are getting sick each day. When you talk about hospitalizations, the highest was again April the 6th at 1,600 people. And yet just yesterday, that number was 10. So the number of people going into hospitals has fallen off dramatically. And even those who are passing away, the highest number was 487 on April the 7th, and just yesterday, 43. So in New York City, the epicenter of this has seen a significant improvement. And when you look at places like Italy, that have also seen a significant improvement, with the number of deaths falling down to 400, where they're as high as 1,000. Places like Spain, that we're seeing new cases in the thousands, falling below under 1,000 new cases a day. Globally and domestically, we are seeing an improvement, with Europe being a bit ahead of the United States. So that gives reason for excitement, which is why the stock market has come so far so fast. And when we talk about the next steps, it's helpful to think about this process in a four-cycle process. When you look at historical pandemics, Usually, the first stage of a pandemic is explosive new growth of cases. The second stage is getting an understanding or watching that the number of new cases begin to level off and the number of fatalities begin to peak. In the third stage, the number of new cases almost diminishes and the number of fatality goes down. And finally, in the fourth stage, both go down to a fractional number. Well, clearly, we're out of the first stage. Most developed countries are out of the second stage. We're now in that third stage, where the number of new cases is falling off significantly and the number of fatalities is beginning to come down. Even in the United States, the number of new cases is coming down. Our highest day was a few days ago. The number of our deaths are coming down as well. So that's exciting to see, and that's why the stock market has reacted positively in the last few weeks, rebounding from those terrible lows. And to go one further, when you look at the data, when you look primarily at the core emphasis of the data, when we look at who's really getting sick, coming back to New York City for a moment, thinking about New York, just going back a few days ago to April 13th, just looking at that particular set of days, there were, to date, 6,589 people had passed away. Of those, 5,034 had pre-existing conditions in the form of diabetes, lung disease, cancer, heart disease, hypertension, kidney disease, liver disease, or asthma. So the folks who are most susceptible are those who fall into that category, and they represent, believe it or not, in total, 97% of the people who have passed away had a pre-existing condition. Why that's relevant is as we talk about the next stage of the process to getting past the virus from a personal standpoint and an economic standpoint, the data is critical. Why? Because if we think about opening the economy in a six-step process, the first and foremost step in that will be, how do we protect those that are most vulnerable? Well, how do we know who they are is having the data to back it up. And that's one of the most important aspects, because the two unknowns of the market was the speed of the virus and can we stop it? Well, obviously the speed of the virus, we now understand. Slowing it down is a critical component of it. Stopping it is about being about medicines and mitigation of people who can get sick. So in step one, if we can protect the vulnerable, because now we know who we are, beginning to open up the economy can have an approach. Because step two would be expanding the testing, so again, we know who they are. What's the acceptable rate of spread? Step three, who can go back to work that's least susceptible? What are the companies that we can open up gradually that can be least affected by be opening up again, some non-essential companies? Think of a local Starbucks. And then finally, what industries can be turned back on that will be able to use social distancing but still be at work? So the beauty of where we're at today, the ray of sunshine, is that by understanding who's getting sick, we can begin the process smartly of opening up the economy. And when you look at what's happening right now, and the epicenter of it, which is the tri-state area, there's a coalition of a number of governors who have gotten together and decided, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, and decided to put together a plan that would specifically allow for the opening process to be around those steps I just mentioned, because the bulk of the cases are in that area, 65% of them, from a death rate and new infection rate. So that's critical in understanding this. As we go forward, the next part is, where are we at economically? So if we have an understanding of the virus from an economic standpoint, how are we shaping up? Well, certainly right now, as expected, the data is terrible. We're expecting the growth rate in the United States for the second quarter to be a minus 32%. That's terrible. The first quarter, which we just finished, is probably going to be a negative 5%. Those are really very under-impressive numbers, some of the scariest numbers of our lifetime. There's already 17 million people have applied for unemployment, and that number is probably going to grow in excess of 30 million people. That could equate to numbers that are not exactly the same, but starting to look like the Great Depression of many years ago. But the difference between this and the Great Depression is that while our economy is bigger and the number of people in the workforce is bigger, this is specifically targeted in an area where we could assume it's somewhat temporary layoffs. Why? Because the bulk of the folks who are being laid off are from a handful of very specific industries. And I think you probably know what those are. When you look at where the layoffs are happening, it very much is in the entertainment, leisure, hospitality sectors of our economy. That industry represents 45% of U.S. payrolls. Small companies represent 60 million people in and of themselves. So there's a lot of pain there, but I think you can look at it somewhat optimistically that the federal government is committed to stepping in and providing unemployment benefits between 3 and 4 months for folks who meet certain requirements. Under $75,000 a year income, or basically people who make about $1,000 a week, when they get their state aid, plus an additional stimulus from the federal government of $600, their actually monthly income, or excuse me, weekly income, would be basically the same as what they got when they were working. Add to that, the federal government has provided loans to small businesses to pay their employees, be able to pay for their rent, to be able to make up for the loss of revenue, because this really is a forced upon event. So the federal government has stepped in with now what's going to be a $600 billion package, providing what's called a forgivable loan to small businesses to be able to keep them afloat. In total, the federal government's going to put forth $8 trillion of total assets to be able to support the U.S. economy. Because this is an event-driven recession. What that means is it's not as if 2008 when our banks went to agree bankrupt because of overlending. That's not the case here. This is not a typical recession where things just slow down because they've been running in full steam for a long time. This is the kind of event that was forced upon us, a little bit like 9/11 when it was forced upon us. So usually those are the most shallowest types of recession. So what the federal government is doing here is, even though we're going to have massive amounts of people hit the unemployment line, by supporting them for the better part of the next 3 or 4 months, they're simply buying time for small businesses and folks who hit the unemployment line to sustain themselves, to buy us the 3 or 4 months we need to be able to reopen the economy most effectively. And if you follow the timeline of what's going on in Spain or in Italy, and even to a degree in China, there really is exciting news coming out of those countries. That when you look at responses around the world, Austria is easing their lockdowns this week. Denmark is opening up schools. Construction workers are going back to work in Spain. And Italy is opening up small businesses. So we're seeing this process take place in other countries. And if we're 2 weeks behind them, and they're only, for the most part, about 6 to 8 weeks into this, the federal government has bought us enough time to be able to get to the other side of it. So I would call the people who are hitting the unemployment line, to a degree, temporary, meaning they're able to sustain themselves, buy us enough time to get to the other side of this. Another very important point, as we open up the economy, certainly the areas of the economy that employ a lot of people, those leisure industries, are not going to be immediately reopened. But as we do open up very important parts of our economy, areas that employ a lot of people, we could see actually the growth in earnings, the growth of the economy improve pretty quickly. Because, for example, the U.S. auto industry is currently planning on taking production from just 25% of capacity in April to 70% in May. That means turning back on auto plants, putting people back to work. That's very exciting because the manufacturing and construction sectors make up more or less about half of the total hit to GDP that we saw in April. That big reduction, about half of it comes from areas that are potentially going to be opened up here very soon. So we may not see a lot of people go back to get their jobs in the unemployment, from the unemployment standpoint for restaurants and leisure and hotels, but the major parts of the economy that could reopen up may have a real impact on growth, less of an impact on unemployment, but give us the first steps to getting out of this economic shutdown. A critical component of understanding that the government basically is providing income to small businesses and people who are out of the labor force to keep them going, but at the same time providing a path to opening up the economy. So that's a one way to look at it from an economic standpoint. We will continue to see some pretty difficult data. There's no doubt that when you think about how the data of the economy is going to go, whether it's the GDP numbers I mentioned a minute ago, retail sales, how much we all spend on a month-to-month basis is down 8% month-over-month. One of the worst numbers in history, but we expected that. How much corporate earnings are going to come down, roughly 10% in the first quarter and as much as 20% in the second quarter. Again, to a degree expected, and that's why the stock market sold off so much. So the data's scary to look at, but as long as we're expecting it and we're beginning to have a path to opening up the economy, there is this belief that we can start to see some relief in the bad data over the days and months to come. So I think we should focus on not just the bad data that's happening, but the good points of how we're beginning to open up, as well as the improvement from the healthcare
aspect of this as well. And then I pivot to another area. I think it's also important to know that how much you all are confident in the economy is a critical component of it. And we're watching your confidence, what we measure, call it consumer confidence, fall. It has come down from the lofty highs that there were, down roughly 40%. But still not nearly as low, when we ask all of you individually, as low as it was in 2008. And there's an interesting thing going on with the consumer right now. We're watching your savings rate, how much you save, go up. It's actually up over 8%. For every dollar you make, you're saving 8 cents. Very important, because what that means, if you're saving a lot of money, and then at the same token, we're watching credit card debt come cascading down, and we're watching lots of homes being refinanced because they're taking advantage of low interest rates, it means the consumer is going to be in really good shape when this is all over, creating pent-up demand. Because the consumer still drives 70% of our economic growth. And while the consumer is shuttered in place today, if on the other side of this, there's an opportunity to spend again, and it's not a golden lever. It's not as if one day we're going to turn on the lights and everyone's going to rush out and spend money. But that methodical process of beginning to spend as the year goes on means, believe it or not, for the third quarter of this year, we could see gross domestic production not be negative, but actually make a turn for the positive. We're expecting third quarter GDP to be up over 12%, maybe as much as 19%. So it is because of the pent-up demand that the first quarter and second quarter are going to be really pretty tough. But expectations for the third quarter and the fourth quarter are really improving rapidly because there is this path to opening up the economy again. So certainly the human tragedy has been very difficult to deal with. Certainly we're seeing an improvement in the data, and let's hope that those numbers continue to improve. As we open up the economy, we've got to be mindful to make sure we don't go back to where we were. So that's a big part of it. And the plans that are being put in place are certainly built around just that. But then let's go to the second unknown. Let's talk about some of the progress that's being made on the medical front. And I think it is very exciting when you think about where we're going. First off, for vaccines. There's a company out of China, it's a new mention, called CanSino Biologics. They actually are in phase two of testing, and so far, their data has not been somewhat less transparent than we would like, but so far they're having significant success in phase two testing, where of the patients that have been given their vaccine, they're showing full antibodies 28 days after being vaccinated, which is a very positive sign, because basically that means that we're in a situation where potentially they have a vaccine that for a prolonged period of time. Additionally, Moderna, an American-based company, has gone through phase one of their vaccines. And what they found is that when they use a 30 microgram dose of every person that they put through the study, not but 28 days later, they still had the antibodies. What that means is we have two vaccines that are rapidly moving along. Very exciting news on that front, as well as 140 others that are in test one way or another. On the testing front, Rutgers University announced they have a saliva test. Perhaps you've heard of the difficulty of trying to really get our hands around rapid testing. It's critical to opening up the economy. Well, Abbott Labs has come out with something that looks like the size of a toaster that in 5 minutes time can test you if you have the virus, or in 13 minutes tell you if you do not. But this one's different. Rutgers is using a saliva swab that can be also a rapid test. Soon to be rolled out, very exciting news. A newer one, Henley Schein, is a company that can, with a pinprick on your finger, can tell you if you have the antibodies. That's critical, because if you have the antibodies and you're cured, means you can go back to work. So there's an opportunity, or just engage in society, there's an opportunity to not only test if you're sick, but test if you've been sick. And both of those are rolling out rapidly and critical to opening up the economy. There are numerous other companies coming out with rapid testing, so we're excited about what's going on the testing front. It is the necessary component to reopen. And then finally, antibodies different than a vaccine. An antibody is something you can take that will help you recover and buy time until you can get to a vaccine. It's kind of like the old penicillin, get you better but not cure the cold. In this case, there's a company out of believe it or not, combination international, Israel, and U.S.-based Monash University Biomedicine that's using an existing drug called Invectrum that's an anti-parasitic drug that has proven in the lab today to kill the virus within 48 hours. add to that, Pfizer's repurposing Zelgen, Regeneron's repurposing Kevzara. But the most exciting one is Gilead Sciences is repurposing a drug called Remdesivir. And 68% of the patients who received it that were critically ill, 24 hours later, they were off a ventilator. That's really very powerful. Those tests are happening right now in China, Europe, and the U.S. And that proves to work, then we've got a real opportunity to get people out of the hospital. The key in all this is that if we turn the economy back on, can we keep the pressure on the hospitals low? And repurposing drugs or a new antibody is an exciting way to do just that. You probably heard about hydroxychloroquine with some mixed results for some people saying it has worked, some has not. Any of these give us that path to getting folks out of the hospital, which is partially why you're seeing the people leaving the hospital be significantly higher on a percentage basis than those going in. And I have a fun time talking about Dr. Jacob Glanville from Distribution Bio, who says he has an antibody, calls it a cure, you take it, and 24 hours later, you have enough antibodies in your system to completely wipe out the disease and give you 8 to 10 weeks of prophylactic, keeping you out of harm's way. So that's exciting from all the medical front, from testing, from an antibody or a vaccine, that we're making great strides. And I did not mention Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer, who both think they'll have a full-blown vaccine by late this year or early next year. If any of those really come to pass, that we can have success in that context, then I'm convinced that this concern about going into the fall, we will suddenly be back where we are today, or back where we started. That should be able to mitigate the process. And thinking about that, as we go into the summer months, humidity, temperature, the time it takes for the droplets to dry, and more social distancing because we're outside should greatly bring down the spread. So as we get closer to ending this, we're going to probably see some peaks and valleys in the stock market. Certainly, we've had a heck of a peak here in the last few weeks. You're going to see the stock market become very volatile over the next 2 weeks. In fact, to be honest with you, I think the stock market's gone a little too far, too fast. And for that reason, keep your hat on. I don't think we're going to go straight up from here. There's just too many unknowns that still need to be figured out. We still need to wait for the virus to come to pass. We still need to find a vaccine or an antibody that's going to work. We still need to understand how we can get this spread low enough that we can open up the economy. And that's going to create lots of consternation in the market besides all the bad data that's to come. But I think in a moment like this, we should talk about some of the interesting things that are happening. I work in New York City. I live in New Jersey. I can get to my chair in 30 minutes. Well, that just didn't happen at any other time in my life. But I'll give you a fun story I just read about. That is a person who left New York City in an Audi. They loaded the Audi up with extra gasoline to make it from New York City to LA. And believe it or not, they did it in 27 hours. The car was averaging 103 miles an hour. Now, how the heck they didn't get a ticket, I'm not quite sure. But certainly that's kind of unbelievable when 90% of the traffic levels in major cities has dropped. I'm sorry, traffic levels has dropped to 90% less and 50% everywhere else. You're looking at levels of pollution around the globe coming spiraling down. For the first time in years, you're looking at the canals in Venice are almost clean and you can see fish in them. It's kind of incredible when you think about where the unintended consequences of all this. Rail traffic has seen the largest decline since the Great Recession. Flights are down 95%. So when you put it all together, and by the way, that's not a good thing economically, but certainly incredible when we begin to think about it all. Restaurant sales down 70%, specialty stores down 50%, corporate staff, 70% of U.S. corporations are now working from home. You know, when I think about all those different things, some of them impact us economically, and certainly some of them are negative. But if we are aware of the worst of the negative, and we are now beginning that process of beginning the positive, let's talk about those for a minute. You've got the lowest interest rates you've seen in your lifetime. I paid $1.82 for gasoline this weekend in New Jersey. When's the last time you did that? I saved some money by doing that. You're looking at the opportunity to refinance your mortgage at a very low rate. You're looking at the federal government coming in and supporting anyone who doesn't make a lot of money. You're looking at businesses, small and large, now getting some helping hand to keep them afloat. The airlines have just received a package to be able to keep themselves going at a time of great distress. Add to that, you're looking at the body of the U.S. economy going into this was in pretty good shape. We think it's going to be a shallow recession because in the end, we were in good shape going in, and think we can come out of this in relatively good shape because of the stimulus that's been provided and the shape that we're in going into this. So I don't think we want to just assume that the worst is still to come. we should be looking at the worst right now, unless we get a spike again in the fall. But the medical industry and the process in place to be social distance should really limit that. So a couple final thoughts. First off, we've been through this before, everybody. Let's not forget that we lived through 2008. We lived through 1998, 1994, 1987. There's been periods of great stress in our economy, both globally and domestically, and every single time we've come out of it. Since 1928, there's been 14 recessions, 21 bear markets, and every single time, we've recovered with an average rate of return of 8% in the stock market. When you think about, is this new? It's sure, it's a new pandemic. But is it new to Wall Street? It really isn't new. And, you know, the speculation is as old as the hills, and that saying of this is never going to happen again generally means it's going to happen again. I think we should focus on that the behavior of the stock market in recent weeks is very logical. It makes a lot of sense. There's three phases to any stock market event. The first phase is shock and awe. All of a sudden, the market sold off a whole bunch and the market sold off wildly. Remember, a 1,000-point drawdown in the Dow Jones Industrial Average today is nothing on a percentage basis compared to what it was 10 or 15 years ago. It's much less. I mean, heck, today we closed down 445 points. 20 years ago, that would have been a catastrophe. Today, it's 1.86%. So phase one is shock and awe, and we're past that. Phase two means the stock market's going to trade in a range. It's going to be up days, down days, and it's going to do that watching the headlines. What's the latest round of data? Is the president going to play nice with the governors? Is there a new initiative on the medical front? What's the plan to open? Is the data from economics as bad as we thought, or maybe a little bit better? And all those are going to create these gyrations every single day. That's phase two. And then phase three is when we're going to find a bottom and grind higher, when we find out the second unknown, which is, have we stemmed it? And do we have a process to keep the virus rate low, the infectious rate low? And that's to come. That's probably in the next few weeks here. Put it all together. We're in phase two. Together, we're going to make it to phase three. And once we get to phase three and start to grind higher, we'll put this in the rearview mirror that hopefully we've learned from it, we grow from it, and are prepared for it next time. But for now, it means in your portfolios, be in a high-quality portfolio. Have more large-cap stocks than you do small and mid. Have bonds of higher credit quality companies rather than lower credit quality. Maybe hold a little cash to make sure you have some cushion in case things get worse. All in, the worst seems to be over right now. And now we're going to watch the data, make sure it improves, keep these calls going for you to give you a very good idea of how it's all progressing. Hopefully this call was helpful for you. If you ever have any questions, you feel free to ask your financial advisor and they can get a hold of us and try and answer those questions for you. Most importantly, we hope you stay safe. Stay home. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you all again real soon. Thank you very much and have a great day.